Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Six Sens Podcast.
What gives this mess some grace unless it kicks, man? Unless it's fiction. Unless it's sweat or it's songs. What hits against this chest unless it's a sick man's hand from some mid-level band? He's been driving too long on a dark windless night with a stereo.
So let's just get right into this, Tim. Today, Eli Wilson lost his job.
Oh, he did.
That he did as goaltending coach of the Ottawa Senators.
I was unaware. I was under a rock for the past few hours.
I know. Biggest news ever.
Huge. Epic proportions. I don't remember this much fanfare when Hartsburg got canned.
No, no kidding. What's your opinion of it right now?
Geez, there's so many different things that are involved in this decision. It's really hard to pinpoint what I'm feeling right now. I feel initially that this wasn't a panic move. This wasn't any sort of, you know, political maneuvering. This is Brian Murray just trying to resolve an issue, starting at the most simplest level here. People in charge of the goalies. And then if the problem persists, then there'll be other changes made. And that's just how I think about it. I think it might just be as simple as that. I don't think it has to be a big, conspiracy theory against Murray and the Senators' mishandling of goaltenders over the years, and why wasn't Eli Wilson fired earlier? You know, why do we still have this Emery groupie tagging along still in the locker room? I mean, there's a million different things. I know that you and I are going to disagree on this, so you might as well spit out what you've got, you know, steaming
I'm just smiling
in your mouth
right now.
There. Yeah, yeah, you got a real shit-eating grin on your face, and it looks like you're about to feed me some of it.
Well, I just disagree with your take on the fact that you don't think there's no optics involved. It's just as straightforward as a guy getting fired.
People can't see your little air quotes on the radiogram. You might need to maybe air quote your...
Well, fuck, it's not like the Senators' goaltending situation has been fucking good and all of a sudden it was bad in the last, like, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's been more or less as consistent as inconsistency can get you, right?
Like, I don't buy the argument that Eli Wilson was just fired because he was Ray Emery's boy who was brought in as a mentor when they re-signed Emery to a 3-year deal. Like, you know, if they needed an opportunity to turf a guy like that, they would have fired him with Hartsburg last year.
Oh, of course. There's been plenty of opportunity to get rid of this guy before, right?
No, exactly.
And you'd think that, you know, the Senators would be hiring a goaltending coach who's had more experience than, what, a camp with Carey Price? Like, let's not forget here that Bud Fischer runs a hockey camp, right? I mean, for the love of God, Jason Spezza's brother plays goal in their practices. And this is the guy they bring in? I mean, I don't know anything about his credentials. Just on the surface, it seems like, you know, really? It's like a Nobel Peace Prize going to a high school science kid. It's like, that's kind of a prize position.
But why right now?
It has to be because of the play of late. There's no other way to explain it. Brian Murray had to make a move.
I think it just insults the intelligence of everybody who's watched this whole fucking goaltending debacle the last 3 years.
Tell us why Brian Murray thinks we're stupid.
Why he thinks we're stupid?
Yeah, why he's insulting our intelligence. I want
to
hear you on this.
Because you have to wait until a 5-game losing streak to fire a goaltending coach?
Well,
like, you know, if the guy's not doing his job, you would have fucking seen it before this little stretch. It's not like the goaltending hasn't been an issue all season.
Of course. He's had 3 years on the job, right?
No, exactly.
So, I mean, the holes were there. Ottawa hasn't had a particularly strong track record with handling the goalies. I'm wondering why this never came into fruition earlier, actually.
I'm convincing you.
Bit by bit. It's slowly working. I'm just not going to buy the whole entity that, you know, Muckler's, or not Muckler, geez. It's just conditioned my head now that I have to blame Muckler
for
everything.
Yeah. I think that's part of it, though. Because to me, on the surface, it's like, well, why wasn't this guy fired earlier? Obviously, the goaltending was an issue when Gerber was here. Fuck. Like, how long have we shit on that guy for? Wilson couldn't turn him around.
Yeah, we shit him right out of town.
So honestly, though, when are we going to start placing the blame on Brian Murray? Instead of blaming these coaches, when the hell is he going to start taking onus? I noticed Corey Clouston took a little bit of... some of the responsibility in his little press conference this morning. But, like, I haven't heard Brian Murray say anything.
Corey Clouston, in my mind, just said the things that any other coach would say. Like, and the thing that gets me about this a little bit, too, that makes it a little bit more interesting, is that Corey Clouston had to deal with this, not Brian Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Clouston who had to can him.
But, I mean, Brian Murray's the guy who's fucking responsible for all the goaltending problems in Ottawa.
Of course, he runs the ship.
So what's he doing? Is all he pointing
these guys
the blame?
All these guys are his guys, right? LeClaire, he brought in. Elliot, he certainly selected. Like, he didn't select him physically in a draft, but he certainly said, yes, I'm going to appoint you our backup goalie.
And he's also the guy who coached Emery through that Stanley Cup season.
Signed
where
him.
They had the finals appearance. He knew he was a shit disturber who got away with a lot of stuff when the team was winning. He re-signs him to a big contract, signs his boy Eli Wilson to be his goaltending coach, and then, you know, just wipe your hands free. Oh, not my problem. It was the goaltending coach. Like, come on.
I hate to get off topic here, but do you remember that midget that Pedro Martinez used to carry around with him?
What the hell brought that up?
Just a little... Well, it's his...
It's your it's little
his,
boy. That's,
it's
I
it's
get
his
it.
Little
yeah.
boy. It's his boy, right?
Awesome.
If you're anyone else but the guy who's going to bring a World Series to Boston or a guy who's going to bring the Stanley Cup to Ottawa, no way your boy gets in with you. I mean, the NHL doesn't come like that, right?
But I don't know.
This isn't an episode of Entourage here.
Just kind of frustrated because a lot of people are applauding the move. And obviously, like, I'm not going to sit here and judge whether or not Wilson's a good goaltending coach. Like, I don't fucking know. Obviously, he's got to bear the burden because he, you know, the goaltenders were getting the job done. But sooner or later, we got to start pointing the blame at Brian Murray at some point. You know, he's had 3 years. I've apologized for him, I guess you could say.
I wouldn't say that you have apologized for him or that we have apologized for him. We've just simply stated the facts about what was occurring under the reins of Muckler and what you're left with when you walk into a situation like this. And on the car ride over here, we were talking about this. This has been 3 years now going on, and we really haven't seen a true vision as to where this team's going, right? We don't know.
Well, if you asked me, I wouldn't even know what the direction of this team is right now.
Exactly, and the best I can come
up with... I guess
that's
probably why I'm so frustrated right now.
All I can think of is that the team needs to make the playoffs, and how well we do in the playoffs seems to be up in the air. Maybe people or the ownership group doesn't really want a first-round sweep again. If we're so fortunate to make the playoffs this year, that's exactly what we're going to get, too. Again, right with the goaltending. But like, I don't think Eli Wilson's going to really... Maybe it's not so much about the man himself as it just is about shaking things up a little bit, putting people on edge, wondering what else is going to come next, right? Because they know that you can't fire the goalies, so you fire their coach.
And you can point the blame at the guy who brought in the goalies.
Yep.
And that's all my point is. I just have a little... That's my only beef with the issue right now. If Eli Wilson's the first of many changes to come, I'm absolutely cool with that.
What do you think of Corey Clouston's future in Ottawa?
He's... probably the only guy who I have a ton of faith in right now.
Why is that?
Look at the team's record right now. They're in the playoffs. Considering all the bad shit that's gone wrong this year, how can you criticize a guy? I don't know another coach in the NHL who could get more out of his team right now than Corey Clouston.
No, he really is. He's really working them to the bone. He's obviously had a little bit of, rookie mistakes. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not mistakes so much as just kind of, humming, hawing, indecision, running out here.
Well, I have another question for you then, because we're still talking about Wilson a bit and the coaching staff. If we're going to shit on the goaltending coach for the poorest play of their fucking goalies, when the hell is Greg Carville going to get responsibility for that power play?
Thank you. That is what I've wanted to know too, is we have the league worst power play right now. 30th in the league.
Yep. And it's been bad since the beginning of the season.
And they've tried to correct it numerous times. Mm-hmm. I assume that this problem has gone further.
You can't pin it on the lack of attempts. We're getting a number of power plays now.
Yep, there's no longer that referee conspiracy looming over us. That's been
no,
shifted.
That's been shifted over to Vancouver.
Yep. Yeah, we'll maybe get into that later if we can. Oh God. Children, all of them.
We'll talk to Wayne Scanlon about that.
Yeah, we can fill us in.
I don't know. What do you do with this team right now? They're on a 5-game losing streak. The players aren't getting it done. They look like they're waiting for Alfredson and Spezza to get back.
They look like they're out of gas. They just look gassed. They just look like...
They look mentally spent and physically spent.
And they're defeated before they're ever even out of the game on paper, right? Like, they're just done with it. Like, they're just going through the motions at this point.
No, exactly.
Trying to put up the good fight and, you know, give a good effort. But I haven't even been seeing good efforts out there.
No, they look disorganized.
No one
everywhere.
Has, and no one has stepped up and said, you know what? I'm gonna earn myself an extra figure next year by stepping up and becoming a big-time player for the Senators, or just someone who can just stopgap it and maybe turn a couple of these losses into a win or a tie or something. I mean, they have to net some pretty big goals, but...
Have you been impressed by anybody on the roster during this little stretch of injuries?
I was at the Panthers game
yeah.
on Saturday night, and it was a Christmas gift from my mother, and I didn't have the heart to call her when I got home and tell her that for Christmas, she got me the absolute worst fucking gift I've ever got in my life, because that was actually the worst hockey game one of the worst hockey games I've ever seen in my life. There was just no effort out there. I've had a better time watching hockey at the Carp Arena than I had at that game. I mean, it took me a few Heinekens to get through it, actually, and it was just unbearable. No one had any spark on the ice. Zach Smith, God bless that kid's heart, the boy can't skate. He'll never be anything more than a fourth-line kid on Ottawa. But unfortunately, he looked like the best Senator on the ice on Saturday night.
I guess that's my biggest beef with the team, though, is the fact that you have a team, granted, they're not that talented, but they can still control the work ethic and the system that Corey Kluzin has installed in the team.
Absolutely. You can back check. I mean, I don't necessarily think that, you know, getting in a couple more scraps per game is really
losing.
Gonna...
Losing a game 3-1 is more acceptable than watching them lose 6-1 to Atlanta.
Yeah, you can do it with dignity, right? Like, you can die on your knees, contrary to what those No Fear t-shirts say. But you absolutely can. That's okay. That's admirable. We're from Ottawa. We're used to a little bit of piss and vinegar and shameless defeat. That's okay. Just ask the Rough Riders what that's all about.
So we've talked a bit about how the team hasn't been able to control their own identity, their own work ethic, how they play, the system. Goaltending, going back to like Eli Wilson, the goals that they've allowed are controllable. The good news is that they've made the big saves, but they let in the soft and deflating goals. It's like watching Martin Gerber all over again.
Yep, and just the goaltending theory of just get in front of the puck and hope it stays off someone's stick when it bounces out to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rebound control, especially from Elliott. LeClaire, you know, been bad, but Elliott's been the one that's really stuck out in my mind as having very poor rebound control at the NHL level. And I think that that contributes to some of these soft goals. Like that, maybe Elliott's in good primary position when he stopped making the initial save. After that, he's just fucked.
I think the confidence and trust in the team is just fucking lost. Between the forwards and the defense and the goaltending, it's a fucking mess right now.
Could you imagine playing behind Chris Campoli, Picard, and Kuba, and Carlson?
And a green Carlson, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, did you
of
see?
Of course you're going to be on edge. You don't know. You don't know if the guy... You basically expect every play to end in one of the Sens defensemen on the ice in a heap right after getting schooled.
I wish I had Pascal LeClaire mic'd up, unedited, on Sens TV. That'd be great.
I don't think I'd want to hear that muttering and the ramblings. God.
After the first goal that Bolton scored last night against the Sens, I bet it was when he saw like Picard get burnt at the blue line pinching, and then...
You know how you know you're not a playoff team? Eric Bolton scoring goals against you.
Highlight reel goals, too. Yeah. But, did you see LeClaire's reaction after the third goal, too?
Oh,
Where he just shrugged and he just lifted his arms like...
Classic goaltending maneuver, something out of Slapshot, right? Like, just what on earth can you do? And you feel for the guy when you see that, right?
Oh, man.
You really do. It hurts. Apparently, he was jovial today, though, when they were skating around New York.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, apparently he was in a good mood. busting a move a la Kovalev. It seems like everyone's more concerned with So You Think You Can Dance Canada than So You Think You Can Play like Professional Athletes. Big question here now. Looking forward, Wilson's been fired. What does the future hold for Pascal Leclerc and Brian Elliott in Ottawa? Like, do you have anything else to add to this?
I think some of the blame obviously has to go to Murray. I've already mentioned that. But, I mean, at the same time, I guess you could also argue that what Murray's done kind of absolves its goaltenders of some of the blame and some of the criticisms that have been lauded, their, like, thrown their way.
Oh, absolutely.
The fans and media.
It's a very good point. Very good point, right?
But,
and you take your sacrificial dog and you throw him under the Minnesota Wild's burning bus, and next thing you know, Eli Wilson's out of a job, and at least you've been able to silence people for a week or so to allow these guys to get their shit back together.
Well, now that he's out of work, maybe Corey Kluzik can hire him as a fashion consultant.
Oh, that's true. He's a snazzy dresser.
That's where Emery got it, right?
Yep. Scrolling through a few internet comments today, I saw more than one jab at his at his interest in clothing, but we'll leave that aside.
What was that website link you found?
When you Google Eli Wilson's name, scroll down 3/4 of the way down to the bottom of the page, and there's some Australian skincare called Eli Wilson's Skincare. It could be an interesting avenue for him if he wants to get into personal training and Aussie skincare. Like, certainly the flavor of the week this week, though, eh? Everyone's been cutting up Eli Wilson now. I haven't heard this guy's name really in a negative connotation for, like, you know, 2 years now, right?
No,
like,
now everybody, it's just a beacon of optimism that people can gravitate towards.
He just became this guy that all of a sudden was disposable and would all of a sudden change the course of the games.
It's amazing, though, how this is, like, the best thing to happen to the team in, like, weeks.
Yeah. See, the other thing I don't get, and I don't remember who said it, because everyone said everything about this already, but, like, Eli Wilson's not the one out there getting shelled, right? He's not the one getting bombed out there. Like, he can only do so much with these people, right? Like,
Don Brennan had actually a good quote on Off the Post. He's like,
Maybe
Eli Wilson could have told Pascal Leclerc to hug the post a little tighter. But, like, the onus is on these guys to play.
Yeah, of course. And these guys are professional athletes. Eventually, your God-given talents or your, you know, whatever given talents, wherever they come from, and the years of coaching and presumably goalie camps taught by people like Eli Wilson and Bud Fisher, you would have a pretty good idea of how you get success in the National Hockey League level, especially with Leclerc having already achieved so much success. And at the end of the day...
You point we have the another... finger at the general manager.
Nope. We don't. It's official. We have a goaltending controversy in Ottawa. Again, we have it. Every week on this podcast, we've been, you know, joking around. We had the Mike Brodeur thing. We had people getting yanked left, right, and center last week. Hell, Pascal got yanked last night. I mean, I don't think giving up 3 goals is really...
Has it been his last 3 starts he's been yanked in? Yeah, I think it's something like that.
Definitely 2.
Yeah.
And definitely the last 3. And then Elliott, obviously, when... they were flipping around.
Yeah. All right. So aside from looking forward past Eli Wilson, Betsa and Alfredson and Mahalik hopefully will be back soon.
But Eli Wilson never will. I just can't get over it.
Just move on.
Okay. I'm done with it. So the big guys are back. Coming back. Alfie skating.
Do you think it's a bit naive to think that this team can flick the switch as a collective when these guys get back? Because they're not playing with any kind of fucking system. They're disorganized.
I believe you wrote it the other day in the blog when you said that the Sens were playing like they knew these guys were skating again.
Yeah.
And it's definitely how it looks to be. It looks like they are just waiting for the reserves to come in and bail them out.
The last time this happened, where Alfie came back on that bum knee, bounced out 4 straight, Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep, that's true. And the other thing that's concerning me about this is when you look at the upcoming schedule that the Senators have.
Mm-hmm.
Now is not the time to be rushing these guys back.
You know what? Even if they come back, it's going to be hard pressed for them to make a difference. Like that schedule coming up to the Olympic break? Like, read over the list of teams. I posted it on the website the rest of the month of January, but read the list of, I think, what is it, 15 games or something?
Yeah, 15 games over 31 days I've got here. So let's go through these. We might as well. We got time to burn. You guys are probably interested. Some of these will be outdated by the time you hear them, but sure as hell you can look back on us as the oracles of the truth for once. We got New York Rangers tomorrow night coming up. That is possibly a winnable game.
Rangers are kind of hot right now.
Yeah.
They're not losing in regulation, so that's a tough one. And they got Lundqvist. Again, Ottawa can't score.
No.
They're not playing well.
But Dubinsky's cooled off like Fisher and Mahalik, so maybe we'll be all right. We got Montreal also. I mean,
that's a big game.
So what do you think? Maybe do you think it's unreasonable to expect a split maybe?
No, least? that's a winnable game.
Yeah, okay. All right, we'll take that.
Is that how we're going to do this? We're just going to go through winnable games and not winnable games?
Sure as shit, we might as well. Boston.
Ouch.
Nope.
Tim Thomas.
Never in my life will I ever see the Senators beat the Boston Bruins again. God, that's pathetic. Chicago Blackhawks.
No, that's a tough game.
We're going to get burned there. St. Louis.
Possibly winnable.
Yeah, it's, again, possible. I'd err on the side of caution and not really, you know, get too, you know, up on things. We'll probably lose it. Boston.
Again. Awesome.
New Jersey.
Tough.
Losable game, definitely. Pittsburgh, what do you think?
It keeps getting worse. Yeah,
sorry, I had to. You weren't really looking at me for your cue to respond.
Oh, I thought you were just going to keep reading them off. Sorry.
Head down, shaking. Looks like you're in cold sweats. Blood on your pants. You don't have blood in your pants. Buffalo.
At least we can beat Buffalo.
And even
there
if
you
we,
go, one win.
Even if we don't beat Buffalo, at least we get to rip on the city of Buffalo after the game. Always my favorite part of a Buffalo Sabres game. Vancouver.
Yeah.
Depends who's refereeing
and
it.
And then Toronto.
I guess.
And then, yeah, Toronto, Calgary, Washington, and Detroit.
All of those, with the exception of Toronto.
It looks like there's been five or six winnable games, and then the rest were serious underdogs. Out of 15 games?
Oh, yeah, 15 games. We are pinned to the wall here with this schedule coming up, and I know Brian Murray is going to want to have these big guys back in the lineup in time for these important matchups, but I'm wondering if that's the right thing to do with the Olympics coming up. I mean, Mahalik and Alfredsson are, almost said Spetsa there. Spetsa's not on any Olympic team. Alfredsson and Mahalik both on Olympic teams. Of course, Jarkko Ruutu, we want to keep him fresh. He'll be playing in the Olympics, and at least this year we won't have to worry about Christoph Schubert and his Olympic conditioning.
I'm just trying to do some quick math here looking over the schedule.
Yeah, I can see that. What do you got there, Matt Damon?
Well, I'm just thinking, obviously, there's probably like five or six of these that Ottawa has a legitimate chance to win.
Okay.
So let's just say Ottawa gets 10 points.
Okay, 10 points out of
the next 15. So out of 10 out of 30. 30.
Yep.
Because you're looking at the schedule. It's, you know, that's ridiculously difficult. So worst case scenario, I think Ottawa gets 10 points.
Which isn't far off from the point per game that they're producing right now, right? We're at, okay. 44?
All right.
Because we're at 44 games through, 47 points. Yeah. So that's, you know, it's a good sample size, I think.
Okay, so that right now we have 48 points.
Yep.
So let's say we tack on another 10.
Walk me through it. Yep.
So another 10 games puts us at 58 points.
Yep.
15 games to our 47 right now, 62.
Yep.
So what's the magic playoff number usually? Like 92 points?
Yeah. That's usually what they say.
So if Ottawa has 58 points in 62 games, that means they'll need 34 in the next 20 games to get into the playoffs. That means they have to win 17 in the remaining 20 games after the Olympic break to get into the playoffs.
Just to get to our magic number of 92, which might even be thrown out the window this year considering how incredibly tight the East is. Is there anything tighter than the Eastern Conference right now, Graham?
No, it's disappointing. No. But I guess if you're a fucking negative guy who wants to see Ottawa get a good draft pick, then...
Hey, I'm...
This is like Christmas to you.
You know what? I'm one of those draft pick guys. I don't want to ever see an Ottawa Senators team even remotely...
Just outside the playoffs, fall short, and then...
I don't want to
go through that. You know what?
Yeah.
Because this is a bad draft year, right?
Exactly. But
so that's the silver lining. If they do poorly, and they end up getting... Actually, log on to the website, and then find out who was... what did it take last year to get a top five pick? How many points?
78.
It's 78?
Yeah.
So I think after all that, Ottawa would have 78 points. So that would. It put us in the top five position.
Yep.
If we crap the bed.
And that doesn't also... I know that this is all hypothetical mumble jumbo here, but that's not saying that a team like Toronto or, you know, not Carolina, not Edmonton, but someone could possibly overtake us, maybe end up with a little bit of a better lottery position. So with the with our little math segment here, our intro to Senators Ology 101, Ottawa has what chance using our website we have up here right now to get into the playoffs?
Well, on Twitter today, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail put up a piece detailing that the Toronto Maple Leafs have a 0.2% chance of making the playoffs. So I checked out the website that he linked to, and it was, I think it's like Sports Club Stats or something like that. but I'll post a link on the website when this is posted. But currently, Ottawa has a 17% chance of making the playoffs today.
That's fantastic.
Down 13.4% after that loss to Atlanta.
That's really impressive. Really impressive. I'm just glad the BCS isn't involved in this, because otherwise we'd have absolutely zero chance.
So what do you think?
Come on, BCS joke's appropriate.
I know. It's awesome. But so if you're Brian Murray, what do you do? Obviously, you have these players coming back. What's the direction of this team moving forward? Because like I put that poll up on our website asking fans what they want to do. Status quo, retool, rebuild, or trade for some pieces.
I can't believe people actually voted for stay the course. That is mind-boggling. That is the number one response to that poll is stay the course. Why on earth would you want to stay the course with a team like this? As I was saying earlier, the one thing I will never, ever want to see a Senators team do is to intentionally tank or to not give their all. You know, it's like that Barnaby article in The Citizen about coaching, right? No matter what, win or lose, just try hard and just give people a show, right? End of the day. But I would sure as hell like a top five draft pick this year. It would appease my mind a little bit more. At least that way they're kind of forced to rebuild.
I kind of share the same mentality, but I don't mind status quo. As long as you're giving kids like Regan a chance to play like decent minutes and give them a chance to develop and
Decent line mates,
yeah,
too, would be
but
nice.
Like go through some adversity and build a little resiliency that you can use in the future. But
I'd also like to see the Senators maybe have a good look at the team coming up. Murray's got a long break, right? Because we got the Olympic roster freeze, and then,
well, he almost has to decide. I think by the end of that end of the 15 game stretch.
Yeah.
Like what he's going to do, because I think the trade deadline is March 3rd, and that comes up right after the Olympic break.
Yeah, days after. So they've really got to assess here whether or not they're happy with the status quo, which more likely than not, they probably will be. They'll probably tinker a little bit. I imagine that.
But obviously, the team's not going to do well with their first line out. But I'm looking at the rest of the roster, and there is nothing there. Beyond guys you keep anyways, like there's nothing there.
And there's really not much in the pipe either that can help us, as we've seen with our call-ups and everything, right? Like, which has been a shuffle with the AHL squad.
And that's what Alan Panzeri was writing in the Citizen, I think, yesterday.
Yeah, and unfortunately, none of those guys have really helped us either. No one's really stepped up. Like I said, Zach Smith was the best player on the ice in the Florida game.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you know, St. Pierre, he's
got
not
nothing.
A future star.
Keller.
Keller, not a future star.
Going back to the
star.
Future star, yeah.
Denny Hamill. I'd almost rather see Hamill back up, actually, just for old time's sake. Who would he ski? No.
I'm surprised you can say that with a straight face. That's impressive. After that Finuf hit?
I was trying
do you remember
to
that?
Back. I do remember that.
That was disgusting.
That was a nice hit by Finuf.
But yeah, there's nothing.
Did Muckler a favor.
There's nothing there. And it's depressing. Like, I know they have Peterson. They have Silverberg as forwards, who are probably, what, three years away?
Yeah.
Maybe four from ever being productive full-time players.
If they even become full-time productive players, right? Like, that's the other thing, right? For all the prospects here, you might as well just count three of them as being trash, and one of them will be, you know, fodder.
Well, you just cross your fingers that they'll be top six forwards. But, like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, we can call that the Nick Foligno Make-A-Wish Foundation right there.
Well, that's a name that you bring up. It's like, what happened to this guy this year? After the strong finish that he had at the end of last season... He's a guy who has not stepped up his game at all this season. I haven't been impressed at all.
I think if this team is to reconsider rebuilding or even retooling, whatever expression you want, to get younger, cheaper, and ultimately better in a few years, I think that Nick Foligno is one of the guys who should absolutely be moved.
Yeah.
No question about it. I think that he's really plateaued as a player. I think that you can kind of expect, you know, 15 goals from him a year, you know.
Some hard work. Good work along the boards, and that's about it.
Yeah, like decent in his own end. Really doing nothing spectacular, though.
He's like a poor man's Peter Schaefer.
Yeah, that's kind of it. I'm so glad Schaefer's out of town. I liked him when he was here.
Oh, he's
but
a flake,
I'm
yeah.
So sick of hearing about Foligno's how good he was on the boards.
Foligno's a better, he's got a better head on his shoulders than Schaefer did.
What do you think is the worst Senators allegation of all time? The best first passer, the best along the boards, or the smartest guy in hockey?
There was an article today on the Senators' website lauding Chris Kelly's IQ again.
Oh, what? This guy is a fucking NHL hockey player. He's not out there, you know, building bridges or...
He's an engineer on the ice, Tim. But, like, that was the basis of this Rob Brody guy's piece. His smarts are an extra thing in his toolbox on the ice.
Fuck. If he's the smartest guy in the NHL, then, you know, it just reaffirms the fact that...
Well, he does play against guys like Steve Downey.
I just say, like, a lot of these guys, you hear them talk, and it's like, you aren't fit to bag my groceries.
Speaking of smart goons, what do you think Mike Danton's majoring in right now?
Sociology. He's taking social classes. How on earth does that bag of scum, A, get into a Canadian university, B, part-time? How is he even eligible to play? Are you allowed to play CIS hockey or any sport if you're only a part-time student?
Yeah, I think so.
Three classes is part-time, correct?
I think you might need 3.5 credits, I think.
Yeah, anyways, it's borderline, if anything. But what? How does that happen?
Yeah.
How desperate is this team to make an impact? It's like signing Sean Avery or...
Who the fuck would want to play with Mike Danton?
Burroughs?
What happens if David Frost bursts into the room?
I don't know. They pull a Washington Wizards and everyone goes their merry way and the justice system gets it right. Unbelievable. I hear these quotes from the corrections Department of Corrections, right? And they're saying how it's good. They always encourage people to go back to school once they've gotten out of jail. But you're still returning him to his old demons. This is just going to encourage him. He's just going to get a gig in the ECHL after, get a new agent, try and kill him, change his name again. It's just going to be real messy.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, so I think that was actually bigger news today than Eli Wilson. So, obviously, Mike Danton, his parole officers, his legal team of experts, they probably had a vision of him getting back into the game of hockey. I don't think anyone expected it to be.
Is this segue for, like, getting back to, like, what's Brian Murray's vision?
Yeah, it is. It is. You read my mind. That wasn't like it was planned at all. It actually wasn't. That's the sad part about it.
Oh, man.
But I want to get us back on topic. Nothing derails a conversation like busting out Mike Danton's name. All I can picture is Kyprios looking around, trying to figure out where the hell he is, why it's so dark. And when's Barbara Walters walking through the door? Worst television of all time. Kyprios interview. Get out the cabbage. So what do you think Brian Murray's vision is here? Like 3 years?
I don't know. Based off last year's precedent, I have no idea.
That's sad.
Like, I don't mind. The LeClair trade was great. You got a second round pick in LeClair for essentially a third line guy who was underproducing.
Yeah. So let's not keep this as an evaluation of all the trades. This isn't.
No. But, I mean, at the same time, you're like, wow, you got a draft pick, you got a goalie, and the pick ends up turning out to be another goalie. So you're hoping that, the future in Nets is locked up for the foreseeable future.
And the back end was looking good up until...
Well, and then...
It still looks good. It still looks okay. Like, the back end in a few years should be okay.
But then Ottawa was a bubble playoff team at the time. At the time, Ottawa was a bubble playoff team. And a bubble playoff team should never be trading first-round picks. And I guess that's my biggest issue with the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, it just kind of goes to show that there's really no consistency in his tactics when you're acquiring first-round picks, then flipping them, and it just makes little to no sense. You'd think if you were rebuilding, then you would keep them all, right? And if you weren't, then you might consider selling them all and get yourself, through the bubble and into the great big ocean of the playoffs and get our asses kicked again in 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that's the biggest issue here, is that Senators fans for years now haven't had any idea where this team's heading. We had Brian Murray come in initially.
Well, we knew where they were heading. It's just, how are you going to remedy it? And we haven't seen that yet.
Well, that's what I mean. What direction, like what plan did Brian Murray sell Melnyk on when he got hired? What was his vision when he got hired? And why the hell has no one heard it? Why has it not been revised? Why has Melnyk not come out with a State of the Union address? We're halfway through the season here. We are currently tied for the last playoff spot and falling quickly. What's going on?
The organization probably doesn't want him to have another press conference with a State of the Union address.
Go on the Fan 590 then. Do something. Do what you usually.
Come
on our
show.
Tell
people to blow themselves up again.
The way some Sens fans act, I think that's actually the best advice he could have given some of them.
That's why attendance is down.
Kudos to him. Yeah, there's another thing he could address. Maybe people would be more willing to spend on tickets if they knew, like, I'm gonna go ahead and get my season's tickets for next year when they go on sale because, I think they might have this kid coming up or, Murray made a shrewd move in the offseason. I can't wait to see player.
Well, that's the thing.
Or,
it worked for the Islanders with Tavares, but, I mean, he's a generational talent. But, I mean, yeah, like,
did you,
you can sell hope. I think people in the city are smart enough and they watch enough hockey now because the technology and television has improved to the point where they look at other teams and they say, wow, those Chicago Blackhawks are an entertaining bunch. And then they'll watch the Senators play and they're like,
fuck, I'm from Ottawa.
Who
I
are these shit stains? Don't insult us by sending us emails from the organization saying, oh, come pay to see Martin St. Pierre and the Binghamton Senators because Martin St. Pierre is a future Senator star.
We fucking know better. We have the internet. We have televisions. You know, we read newspapers.
I don't know. It's just this team seems like they need to, like, let the fans know what the hell they're doing. And I guess that's the thing. You look at, like, if you were to evaluate all Brian Murray's moves in the last year, you're like, well, there's some short-term fixes and there's some stuff in the future. It's just, I'm conflicted. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
How much longer is Brian Murray's shelf life in Ottawa?
Another 6 months.
What has to happen in those 6 months for him to either retain his position? He's going to do something. He must know he's on the chopping board. We kind of felt that pinch last year. Then all of a sudden he was promoted to whatever, like that triple head of Senators, like management or whatever it is with leader and the lady.
Well, I look at Murray's tenure and I say, okay, spotty trade record. He came in on the 12th hour for his first draft, doesn't have his own scouts employed, so he has to rely on Muckler scouts, and he ends up picking Jim O'Brien. So essentially, like, I'll give him a freebie on that. Say, all right, that's not your draft. You don't have your personnel in here.
Let me stop you there.
Yeah.
Ballpark it. How many hours in any given week did Muckler scouts actually have to do work when they were employed by John Muckler? Is that just the gravy train right there, that job?
That's a joke. But, like, to his credit, the only thing that people have lauded Murray for, essentially, are his last two drafts. But all the prospects are still young enough. We're the only ones who we've seen any progress with are Carlson and Zach Smith.
And Peter Regan.
Yeah, he's a Muckler guy.
He's a Muckler guy, but he's... Yeah, that's true.
You can give Muckler credit. It's okay, Tim.
I like Peter Regan. He's a good hockey player.
There you go.
He's a good center.
Good for you.
Better than Chris Kelly.
Pains you to say it.
Hell of a lot better than Chris Kelly.
But yeah, like, it's the only basis of fucking evaluation that you can give positively for Murray are these two drafts where we haven't seen any of these kids pan out. All we have to go on are these scouting reports online that say Weir, Koch, Cowan, and Carlson will be good defensemen. And then you have a little faint glimmer of hope with guys like Peterson and Silverberg and Lehner. But who knows how many of those fucking guys will make it.
Exactly. One thing we certainly know and that we've learned just as well today as any other day is that goalies just aren't safe in Ottawa.
Not just that, though. Like, Brian Lee, how are you doing?
apparently he's an Edmonton Oiler.
That's a joke.
According to some.
Just a joke.
Yeah. Brian Lee, his trade value must just be absolutely destroyed right now. Kills me seeing all these people who throw out these suggestions about what trades would make sense. And they treat Brian Lee as if he's, you know, like a young...
he still has values.
Brent Burns or something like that, right? First round pick. You know, we overvalue him. But at the end of the day, all we're going to get for him is like a Laton Dress type return, right?
Yeah, no, that's a fair evaluation.
Just another young guy who has a brand yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And hope for a change of scenery.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a guy
is
like...
Is there anyone off the top of your head who you'd have in mind? Just think about it.
Who I'd like?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? When I first heard Cullen's name, I spent a minute thinking to myself, like, you know what? Maybe this isn't as stupid as I initially thought. And then my head cleared, and I realized that if the Senators bring in Cullen, I'm just going to have to boycott entirely. But then Andrew Burnett's name came around.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, all right.
It sounds like Mike Conroy all over again.
You know, like...
Bring in a rental.
Cullen doesn't seem so bad anymore that you bring up Burnett. But the one guy who I wouldn't mind that I've seen his name kicking around is Cogliano. I think he's a great support player to have. I'd love to see him on the line with Mahalik.
But how many Coglianos do you need on your team? You already have Peter Regan. You have Ryan Shannon. How many more of these guys do you need? He's not going to play top 6 minutes, so why the fuck would you want him?
Hey, listen, I never said Ryan Shannon should be on the team next year, right? I never said he's going to be here.
Yeah.
I think Ryan
Shannon... he's cheaper than Cogliano, so is Regan.
Yeah, but Peter Regan hasn't been in the league as long, and Shannon might get a little bit of a pay. Obviously not as much as someone like Cogliano would make, but he'll get paid. He'll get paid.
But again, if he's not going to play top 6 minutes, I don't want to see him here.
Yeah, and apart from that, like, no one's going to be willing to trade a guy who's on a rookie contract, first of all, so let's just completely forget about that.
Yeah, without giving up something substantial in return.
Yeah, like, no one's stupid.
Nobody's going to want a guy who, like Jim O'Brien, who's centering the fourth line in Binghamton. They're not going to want Brian Lee, who hasn't played more than, what, 30 games in a season?
Yep, and no one wants to also, and the Senators shouldn't be going after guys who are about to become, you know, RFAs or UFAs, unless an upcoming RFA is really worth their weight in gold, like, you know, Kessel type situation, right?
Well, the only way I'd want a guy like Cogliano is if you could buy low and you fleece him.
Yep. where you just dump some garbage on them, hope for the best.
Yeah.
The more and more I think about it, and this was really hard for me because I'm a big fan of Anton Volchenkov, and I think he's a hell of a hockey player. But the more I think about it, the more that the Sens play the way that they have played, he's not making a damn of a difference out there. He should be traded. I think he got to trade Volchenkov.
I think you have to explore the market. I think Brian Murray has to listen. I think that's got to be part of the direction of this team.
Absolutely. You're not doing your job if you're not out there shopping these guys. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can take back, you know, a package of, you know, whatever, like a draft pick or two, like, you know, a first and a third or something, or, you know, a decent prospect, like, you know, a guy who's maybe like a B, could become a B+, could be a C-, that'd be okay too, like, right? But the Senators just, they really need to spin some of these assets that they have right now. There's so few guys on the team with good trade value that you got to spin them.
Well, there's a ton of inherent risk, right, in keeping Volchenkov?
I don't think he's going to age well. I really don't. He's already showing it.
My only concern with Volchenkov is it's not so much that he's blocked a ton of shots and he's logged a lot of minutes and he plays a physical style that could break down his body in the future. Like, that's not my biggest concern. I don't see him getting like an 8-year contract where he's old by the time it expires.
Yeah. No, I don't either.
But my concern with Volchenkov is that just because he's on your top pairing, he'll want top pairing money. And for a one-dimensional defenseman who has trouble moving the puck, I have genuine concerns that they might overpay this guy.
Perfect. Yeah, like that's exactly what I think too. And the other thing I'm concerned about as well is whether or not a guy like Volchenkov, he's going to get paid like he's in the prime of his career when he gets to UFA, right?
Yep.
It's going to be his big payday.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm reluctant to believe that his best years are still ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, over the past two seasons or so, we might have seen the best that Anton Volchenkov can be. And he's a hell of a defenseman. He's a good heart and soul guy. He's been in the city for a while now. We've grown up with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's time we cash in our chips on him.
Yeah. My only another concern is I'm just curious as to how much Chris Phillips' game could regress. You know, because he's not exactly on the
ever
upswing.
Seen, remember Jason Smith?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. No, it could be pretty bad.
And really, at this point, are we going to miss Volchenkov? Like, so many goals are going anyways. What's the difference? Like you said before.
We've had this conversation before, though. We looked at this past offseason where, you know, like we shat on the money that Chris Kelly makes, for example.
Perf.
And for, you know, all the big money in free agency goes in the first week after July 1st, right?
Yep.
And then you see bargains. Like, Manny Malhotra signs, I think, like a week before training camp.
Craig Anderson?
Yeah, there's another one. But Malhotra, checking line center, he's playing in San Jose, similar numbers to Kelly, $800,000. And he was just looking for a team to play for, who had money and cap room to fit him in. You know?
And who doesn't want to play in San Jose?
Yeah, exactly. But, like, you're saving over $1 million in salary right there. And, like, you can look at Volchenkov the same way. You can find, like, Jay McKee signed for $800,000 with the Penguins. You can find similar players who make one-third the money who can replace a lot of what Volchenkov brings. They might not be as fast, but they do a lot of the same things.
You know what?
It's dollars in value, right? He plays top-line minutes, but what he brings is replaceable.
Agreed. I don't even know what to say to that, Graham. That's right. This team is just in such a shitstorm right now, and I'm sure we'll see some clarity over the next few weeks. We'll kind of begin to maybe understand what's going on with the team, where they're headed. You know, certainly the next 15 games are going to dictate that.
I don't think it's all doom and gloom, though. Like, if the team makes the playoffs, obviously we'll support them.
Oh, of course. We'll go nuts.
But
hopefully it lasts long enough that it's warm out.
But at the same time, I just want to see the team go status quo. I don't want to see them be trading assets. Like, the one thing that I've seen with the Ross right now is that after Spets out for Cinemaholic, there's nothing there. Kovalev's gone after next year. They need some youth and some assets. And I don't want to see them give up anything to bring in stopgap guys like Matt Cullen. Just go with what you have, go as far as you can, and trim the fat, and move forward, and repeat, and keep doing that. That's just how I feel.
Full-scale rebuild.
Full-scale rebuild. Good on you.
Sign me up.
But
give me draft picks. Give me false hope. I can ride false hope better than I can non-existent Stanley Cup runs, right?
Yeah. We've been talking for a while, though. How about let's find out what Wayne Scanlon has to say.
Deal. I'm going to get a ginger ale, too.
Sounds good. All right. We'll be right back. Play it again, I like. All right, listeners, we're back on the line with Wayne Scanlon from the Ottawa Citizen. Wayne, thanks for joining the Sixth Sense podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. You guys, you waited till they hit rock bottom before you give me a call, so we'd have lots to talk about.
Oh, exactly. Some big news today. But you're the first print journalist to come on the podcast, so we're happy to have you.
Wow. I'm honored.
So are we.
Yeah, and the plaque is being prepared as we speak, so we'll have it to you as soon as possible.
All right.
I always use a new plaque.
All right. So I guess first things first, big day for the Senators as they announced that they fired Eli Wilson. Wayne, what are your thoughts?
Their goalies will never give up another goal this year. Now that they've gotten rid of Eli, their problems are over. I'm being a little bit facetious. I guess you had to make a move. You had to do something, whether it was, you know, a roster move, a trade. This is an easy move to make. It reminds me of, I'm kind of a baseball guy, so I'm used to when a team goes into a slump, they always pick on the batting coach, right? Like, it's his fault that his guys aren't hitting, and I think that's what you have here. But frankly, I was surprised that they kept Eli Wilson when they dumped Ray Emery, because
yeah,
this we thought of him as a kind of a one goalie guy. I mean, he runs a goaltending academy in Alberta and coaches a lot of young kids, a lot of prospects. But his connection with the Senators organization was through Ray Emery. And when Emery left, and you know, they bought out his contract and he went to Russia and then ended up being signed with Philadelphia. I mean, I think we thought that would be it for Eli Wilson, but obviously he did something to impress Brian Murray, and they kept him on. But it's a pretty easy move to make, and it looks a little bit like changing a deck chair on the Titanic, frankly.
No, I'm with you on the baseball comparison. Then Jays fired Gary Denbo, I think it was 2 years ago, and then and they started hitting when Cito Gaston was brought back with Gene Tennis. But I understand.
Yeah, they should have kept Cito as a hitting coach instead of the manager. I think that's
no kidding. Oh, you can't manage a bullpen. But
exactly.
But I guess the concern that Tim and I had was that if you're going to fire Eli Wilson, why wasn't it done when Hartsburg was still in town? Like, you had a perfect opportunity to fire him then.
Well, that's what I don't get. And they brought him back. I don't know. There was something there, and you would think with Pascal Leclerc coming in. I mean, they've made a huge investment in Pascal Leclerc. Not only did they unload Antoine Vermette, a very popular sentiment here, they took on the last 2 years of this guy's contract, and it's a pretty decent ticket. So, you know, there's a pretty big investment in this guy, and you would think that they would want to make sure that, you know, he connects with a goaltending coach, and if he doesn't, then you'd maybe bring in a guy more to his liking. So if they decided that Leclerc couldn't work with Wilson, or, you know, there was some kind of disagreement, or, you know, something just wasn't connecting there, and maybe it had something to do with head coach Corey Clouston, I don't know, but it does seem odd that be having to make this move in the middle of the year when and now they're talking about just bringing in a consultant basically to ride out the season instead of, you know, maybe from the start of last season, if not earlier, could have brought in a guy that was maybe a better match for Pascal Leclerc.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that there should be room for dialogue between the goalie and his coach. I mean, realistically, it's just the two of them and the coach. So you'd think they'd have more say.
Yeah, and if Eli Wilson was a guy who'd played in the league 10 years, well-established as a goaltending guru, and that Leclerc would be happy to come under his tutelage, then you could see that. But this is Wilson's first NHL gig. Again, he was thought of as Ray Emery's guy. I mean, they were living in the same apartment for quite a time while they were here in Ottawa, and I think people thought, you know, the day Ray Emery walks out that door, Eli Wilson walks out behind him. So it was a bit of a surprise to all of us in the media when he stuck around.
Didn't Eli Wilson also have Carey Price in his stable, I guess, of goalies to tour?
It's quite that was one of the good young juniors that he came across at his goaltending. I think it's called the World Goaltending Academy in Alberta, and you know, he's worked with a lot of a good Western Hockey League goalies in Alberta and British Columbia have gone to him. It's I did a small feature on him once, just about the kind of the change that's happening in the NHL with full-time goalie instructors and instructors like Eli Wilson that are you know, very big on the basics of the game, the fundamentals of the game, and are teaching it in schools, and instead of just some guy that has played and was a goalie and then instantly becomes an instructor. You know, this guy has been working for a while as an instructor and was thought to be an up-and-coming teacher, but obviously, you know, something didn't just jive here.
Well, do you think that the reason it just didn't jive, do you think that that's an indication that this was just more of a move to shake things up on the roster, or do you think it was more of a sign of things to come down the road, that Murray is going to shake things up?
Well, I do think it's a shot off the bow. I mean, there was some obviously a practical reason to move Eli, but I think it's just try to stem the bleeding as well. I mean, this is what happened when they just hired Craig Hartsburg last season, and in the middle of the season, Brian Murray had to let him go. That's the last thing he wanted to do, but he just felt it had to be done. And I think in this case, he's got to shake things up a little bit, warn the players, I guess, that, you know, the next time it's one of you guys that gets moved, we're going to have to stop the bleeding here. And certainly with the goalies, I guess in a way he's kind of letting them off the hook. He's saying, you know, this guy's going to be our scapegoat, but now you guys are going to have to find your way out of this and work with somebody new and figure out what it was that was making you decent goaltender some time ago. And Pascal Leclerc's had some decent games, and Elliott too, but neither of them recently.
So where do they go from here, Wayne? Obviously the power play is still struggling. Is that the next focus of attention?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you just look at the guys, the personnel that they can throw in those power plays. I was just kind of fooling around today going back through some old media guides, and I decided it would be a subject for a future column, but, you know, I can share some of the thoughts with you guys. When you look back several years ago, and I'm assuming you guys have followed the team for a long time.
Since 92.
You look at some of the personnel that this team could throw over the boards on a power play and say, you know, 2002, 2003, that kind of era where, you know, you not only had like a Spezza and Alfredson, but they were surrounded by guys like Marian Hossa and Martin Havlat and Sabine Ochera and Radek Bonk. These guys put up big power play numbers. And if you look at the stats from those years, you know, these guys all had 6, 7, 8, 10, 11 power play goals. You know, they were very productive because they could come at you not only with a strong first unit, but also a second unit. And you look at now that Alex Kovalev's got, I think, one power play goal this year, and he was supposed to be the cure-all for the thing. Spets is out and wasn't really performing when he was healthy. Alfredson had a, you know, probably too much focus on him, and at his age just can't carry the ball like he used to. They just don't have the personnel to pull it off. So you can try to keep it simple and jam the net and throw pucks from the point, but they don't have anybody at the back end that you could remotely call a power play quarterback, nor do you have a finisher like a Danny Heatley or, you know, a number of guys up there that can move the puck around and get a goalie moving, you know, side to side, which is what you have to do. So right now they're just trying to get set up, which is a chore in itself, and then get some pucks at the net, but they're just making it too easy for these PK units that they're facing.
No, it's very orchestrated. I guess that was the next point I was going to get to, was the blue line. But you watch the blue line, and none of the guys will shoot. It's like watching an NBA point guard pass off down low to the forwards, and it's just very predictable, and it's all about getting the forwards their touches. And
yeah,
there's not a threat back there to shoot, so they collapse down low, and they take time and space away from the forwards.
Yeah, if you think back to the last goals they scored on the power play, it was, you know, there was a bit of a jam play on one of them. I think Foligno got the puck across, and I can't remember who, I don't know, it was Winchester or somebody just kind of went in off his body almost. But before that, I think it was like a flick shot from the point by, I think it was Picard. You know, Picard and Kuba have that sort of the knack of just drifting a shot, not even putting anything on it, but it's easy to tip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's low, so you have a chance for a rebound. When they try to blast it, they're shooting into pads, and they're not getting it through lanes. And then, Eric Carlson, he's such a project. They're trying to make something out of this guy, but he's getting worse and worse because I think he's losing his confidence, and you know, he's just not able to do anything out there. So it's pretty frustrating, I think, for if you're a coach or a fan of this team and you watch them on that 5-on-3 like they had in Atlanta, and it's just it's hopeless. You know, a 5-minute 5-on-3. I'm sorry, a 5-minute, it was a 5-on-4, and then there was a 5-on-3 component. But, you know, it's almost like when you see this team go on a big power play, you wince because you think they're probably going to lose momentum off it instead of gaining momentum.
It's like that 5-minute, it was like the 5-minute major that they had last night, early in the first period.
Exactly, you know, and then Kovalev takes a dumb penalty to take them out of the, basically wipe out the last 2 minutes of the power play, so it's frustrating. I'm lucky. They give me put a tag around my neck, and I can go in and watch these guys. I mean, that last home game against Florida was one of the most painful things I've ever sat through. But you know, I didn't pay $100 or $150 to watch that, and I really feel bad for the diehard season ticket holder or casual fan who's paying good money and bringing the family out and watching, because it's. You know, when they don't win, it's bad enough. But when they lose, and it's as boring a spectacle as that game was on Saturday, that's tough.
I was actually at that Florida game, and during the earlier taping of one of the segments we were doing, I was telling Graham about how it was possibly the worst hockey game I had ever seen in my entire life. And that was my Christmas present from my mom. And the Senators ruined my Christmas.
She'll never speak to you again.
No, and she certainly won't be buying me Senators tickets ever again after that.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? It's funny because Ian Mendez of Sportsnet, we were downstairs, and I just come down to do the post game, and he turned to me and he said, where does that rank among the – I mean, I'm talking about of the worst of all time that you've seen here. Where does that rank? I said, it's got to be top 10 because it was – it was, and not just what was happening on the ice, because I mean, Florida actually had some decent puck movement, and sometimes you can just admire the opposition. You know, it doesn't have to be all about the home team. You can watch, you know, Ovechkin come in here, or you know, any of the stars or the nice puck moving teams, but that just the feel in the building, it was like it was funereal. It was just there's no life and no hope, and it was just. The whole setting and scene was just kind of depressing.
Oh, it was terrible. There was a guy in our section telling the entire section around me that Brian McCabe is a defenseman the Senators wish they had. And that kind of summed up my night for me right there. A couple Heinekens later, and first game I've ever left early in my life, too, actually. So there you go.
Wow. That's pretty bad when they're sticking you with Brian McCabe. Huh? Brian McCabe jabs.
I know. I thought we had that in our bag, too. That was always our line.
Exactly.
That was always ours. So when I went to the game, I was really looking forward to watching some of the players step up and see what was going to happen, who was going to become, you know, try and solidify themselves a role in the top six, like looking for a guy like Peter Regan or Zach Smith or someone to really show us what they had. Have you seen anyone so far that's impressed you during the time of injury?
Well, Winchester was seemed to be doing okay, and then he got hurt again. But you mentioned Regan. I thought he had a heck of a game last night. Mm-hmm. I watched just about all of that game on TV, though I did switch occasionally to the real hockey game between the Rangers and the Devils.
I thought you were going to say the Hurricanes and Leafs.
No, I actually, yeah, I'd stay away from that one. But I thought Regan had a decent game last night, and afterward I wanted to look at the summary, and I saw he had 6 shots on goal, and that didn't surprise me. It just seemed like he was a pretty constant threat. He got their only goal, and I like him. Like, I think if he was on a team that had a little more going for it right now, was a little healthier, and he could just kind of slide in there unnoticed, I thought he was one of the real bright lights of training camp. He's, you know, I hate to make a comparison to a superstar because he's certainly not that yet, but he reminds me just a little bit of Peter Forsberg, the way he handles the puck and the way he can dart in off the wing with some speed and cut in on goal. You know, if he comes along and progresses, he's a guy that just might be a decent player. And there just haven't been enough of those young kids that we're seeing come in that you look forward to.
No kidding. We actually had an interview with his old Swedish coach when he was in the Elite League, and he actually compared him to Kopitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But Tim and I were concerned, I guess, when the guys come back. Do you see Regan remaining in the top six, or do you think he gets bounced out when Spezza gets back?
Who knows? I mean, he would probably be bounced out initially, probably just to make room for, you know, Alfie will probably be back next week, and Spetz is going to be later on. By then, McCulloch should be back. So, you know, I would think they would probably go back to, like, a second line. I mean, he could sneak onto that second line, depending on what they want to do. If they have Fisher and could have Fisher Kovalev with Regan, but, it, you know, it's hard to say whether Shannon slides in there and Regan goes on the third line. It's all a work in progress, but yeah, there's at least one guy that we have some hope for.
So when eventually when the Senators do get healthy, and I keep believing that they will, what direction do you see the team heading into this tough stretch of 15 games, then the Olympic break, and then ultimately the playoff crunch? How do you see the team going down the road?
Well, I think it's tough because the reason they're hanging on to a playoff spot right now is because they had, you know, a very soft first half schedule, a lot of home games. They beat teams they were supposed to beat, and they had a decent record on home ice. But now you look at their road record. What are they, 6-13-1 or something? And they've got the majority of their games in the second half are on the road. So I really think this team is going to have to find its way and have a major turnaround. It's not going to be enough to just kind of, you know, limp from game to game here and win one and lose one. They're going to have to get on a bit of a roll. They're going to have to find a way to win on the road, and they're going to have to stay healthy. I think it's a pretty tall order. The one thing they have in their corner is that the East is still pretty weak. And then you look at the teams behind them, like Philadelphia passed last night with that win and the Ottawa loss. Ottawa's tied with Montreal. Montreal's got its own issues. The Rangers, the teams behind them, like Atlanta, Tampa Bay, the New York Islanders, these are not powerhouses. These are teams that have their own problems. So I think there's always hope. But, you know, they are going to have to get their stuff together and figure out what it's going to take to win on the road and have an honest effort on the road and stay healthy, and they'll have a shot. But I think this thing will go right down to the wire. They're going to be pressed just to get into the top eight.
Yeah. Did you happen to read Larry Brooks's column from, I think it was 2 days ago? He was drawing comparisons, I guess, between how bad the East is and how the Rangers are kind of hot right now, but he doesn't want to see them become buyers at the deadline. Like, he'd prefer to see them trim the fat, keep going with the youth, and build from there. I guess my question would be, what would you like to see Brian Murray do as the next couple of weeks unfold?
I've been kind of begging this team to rebuild and to just, you know, get serious about it and do almost like Burke, except that Burke screwed it up by trading for Kessel, and, you know, he kind of went against the whole philosophy of coming in and starting over from scratch. But the problem is that Brian Murray's, you know, he's getting on in years. He's not in it for the long haul. He's got an owner that's losing money because, you know, fans aren't coming out for some of the reasons that we discussed, and the fact they didn't make the playoffs last year. So they are desperate to make the playoffs. So the problem is you get into that thing where you're going to give up more draft picks, and you're going to give up another prospect to try to get some other sort of mediocre, you know, top six guy, or a little more depth on the blue line, or God forbid, another goaltender, just to try to muddle through and to get into the playoffs. But it, you know, I kind of wish they were in rebuilding mode. I wish Peter Chiarelli had kind of stuck around and been the heir apparent. But, you know, and I like Brian Murray. He's great to deal with. But I just think his philosophy and the philosophy of the owner is that you've got to have a playoff team every year. But it's difficult to do that and rebuild. It's almost better to be like the LA Kings or the New York Islanders, where you're just horrible for 3 or 4 years. You're at the bottom. You're scooping those good draft picks, and you reload, and all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of guys that develop at the same time. And Ottawa went through this. You know, we talked about some of the names. They had Hossa, they had Havlat, you know, they had Phillips, they had Redden. These were guys that they scooped in the early parts of the draft because, you know, they were expansion team, they were terrible, and they were able to get a plum pick year after year after year. You know, they don't get those picks anymore, but being a middle-of-the-road team, you get neither, you don't get the glory and you don't get the picks either. And you're just, you're kind of stuck in a limbo. And I'm afraid that's where this team is right now.
Well, that's kind of been my concern though, because also as a Canadian team, they're going to have a hard time drawing free agents to play for a middle of the road team that, you know, has to overpay to bring guys in. And, you know, I look at Brian Murray and his trade record and I think it's spotty at best. And the one thing I could probably give him credit for is his drafting in the last 2 years, but who knows how they'll pan out. But, like,
well,
I just... Sorry? I was just like, why aren't you playing to your strength? If your strength is drafting, like Brian Murray's record thus far has been, why aren't they playing to that strength? And that's my concern as a fan.
Yeah, when you talk about free agents that don't want to come here, I mean, Alex Kovalev, this was his team of basically last resort. You know, he wanted to come back with Montreal. They weren't able to bring him back. You know, they weren't going to buck up. And from what I understand, the owner put a lot of pressure on Brian Murray to bring this guy in. He was going to, you know, the owner was going to shove it down Heatley's throat, and this guy was going to be their scorer, and they weren't going to miss a beat. Well, you know, it turned out to be, from the looks of it, halfway through the year, more than halfway through, a disastrous move, and not just because of what he hasn't done this year and what he hasn't done for the team, but because, you know, they're on the hook for him for another year at $5 million, and it's way too much. And again, it's limiting what you can do in other areas because they're right at the cap, and it would almost be better if they were 11th or 12th right now, and don't be fooled into thinking you're a playoff team, and start thinking of the future.
Do you think that the future in Ottawa involves Anton Volchenkov?
I think so. I don't know what he's thinking, but I think he likes it here, and if they, you know, they. They kind of need him because they don't. None of their defensive prospects is ready to step up yet, and he's still their premier shot blocker, and he's still part of kind of a poor man's shutdown tandem. But him and Chris Phillips are the best they have in that regard. So I certainly think they want him back if they can afford him. But you know, I guess Murray will set his price and see what Volchenkov and his agent come in at. But I think they certainly want him back.
What would you say is worth his? If you were to put a monetary figure on it,
well, you know, I certainly think he's worth $4 million.
So, like commissaric, you know, money.
Well, yeah, I would say so. But if he you know gets above that into the, you know, 5 or 6 area and thinks he can get that on the open market, then I think Murray will probably let him try it.
Well, I guess we'll have to see how the tea leaves dry when this season's all said and done. And we'll see what happens. So just to change pace a little bit here, Wayne, I got a couple quick questions, just some rapid-fire questions for you to round things out, if you're willing to oblige.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know how rapid my fire is at this time of the night, but we'll give it a shot.
I'm in the same boat. I've been up since 5. But,
oh, my God.
First question. You're quite the accomplished author. If you were to write a book about the first half of this season, what would you title it?
Oh, my goodness. Up and down on Palladium Drive, maybe.
Excellent.
Next week, we have James Gordon on the podcast. Give us a little fun fact about James Gordon that we should know heading into next week.
Well, his nickname's the Commissioner, of course, for Commissioner Gordon from the Batman series. So you can call him Commissioner.
Who is the best guy to sit beside in the press box?
Well... You don't want to get too close to those sun guys, but they're usually good for a laugh. So, you know, Don Brennan usually gives me a chuckle.
Me too.
You'll have to put in the good word for us then.
Okay.
Over the years, you've been with the team since the onset. What has been your favorite Senators team to cover and why?
Well, I think the year they got to the Cup Final was a lot of fun because, you know, in 03, I don't know if you guys realize, but we had our tickets booked and the bags packed. We were leaving the next morning for Anaheim if Ottawa had won Game 7 against New Jersey, but they lost that game, and so you know, flights got canceled and bags got unpacked. So getting to the Cup Final and the league takes over, and it's a pretty nice gig, to be honest with you, through the grind of the playoffs, and then you get to the fourth round and you know, you got a full buffet waiting for you at the end of a long night, and some fine Californian wine, and that was a pretty great gig.
And to wrap things up, what is your favorite type of team to cover as a journalist, not as a fan, a mediocre team, a great team, or a lowly team?
Well, it's funny you'd ask, because the great teams are fun to cover, but it gets kind of old writing the same stuff. And a weak team is great, because it's like, it's picking cherries. It's actually easier to write about a losing team than it is about a winner. But if you've got a team with potential, I think that's the best. A team with potential to be a winner, but it stumbles and falls occasionally, I think that's the best.
Well, I guess that wraps things up. But Wayne, on behalf of Tim, I'd just like to thank you for coming aboard. We enjoyed speaking with you tonight. And we hope you get home safely.
Okay, thanks.
Absolute pleasure.
Appreciate it. Have a good night.
All right, take care, Wayne.
You too.
All right.
Who says print media is dead?
Not me. Not after that interview. That was fantastic.
Absolutely not. There's a reason that guy's a journalist.
Oh, he's probably my favorite in the town.
Absolutely. I wish the listeners could have heard the little prelude we had with him, too, while discussing the subtleties of Smiths Falls, Ontario. All in positive light, of course. And we hope that his son's hockey game went well, and that the rest of the Bears season goes well for him.
It's nice to know that a mainstream journalist actually feels the same way that we do about the team.
Oh, of course. I was just saying to you, we could have had Wayne on here sitting in the studio with us while we recorded the body and discussed basically all the same things, because, he's obviously cut from the same stone that we are.
Yeah. No, it's good. But any closing thoughts?
Nice to know the little nuances of the press box politics. That's interesting.
Don't sit too close to the sun, guys.
And James Gordon is the commissioner.
Yeah.
Man,
he's good to know for next week.
He's just a superhero king, isn't he?
I know.
Yeah, well, maybe next week we can give him a new title. Maybe he can become the Hulk of podcasts.
Well, I heard Tobey Maguire is actually cut from the new Spider-Man movie that's coming out, so maybe James can throw his hat in the ring.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, it's been a blast. We hope you guys enjoyed the podcast this week. Keep reading the website.
And stay tuned for the next goaltending controversy. We'll be here discussing it, I'm sure.
Take care. Yeah.